U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The U.S.-China trade battle escalates with tit-for-tat tariffs and the threat of more tariffs potentially to come and volatile financial markets in their wake. What's at stake for the U.S. economy and American politics in this China trade battle, and more broadly, the future of the relationship between the world's two largest economies. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot here on Potomac Watch with Kim Strassel. How are you, Kim?
Good, Paul.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's start out talking about the breakdown in talks last week. There was a deal that had been almost done, 95% done by some accounts. Suddenly, administration is claiming that the Chinese have reneged on some of their previous commitments, specific commitments to change their laws to deal with intellectual property, to change their laws dealing with tech transfer, state subsidies and things. China coming back and saying just too onerous, too much, too specific, and we need to have a more balanced deal. In the United States saying, no, we need these specific commitments. Kim, is this a breakdown of talks or are we just in the storm before the calm?
I think it's a cooling off period. That at least seems to be what both sides are presenting. It was a bit of a surprise to the Trump administration when the Chinese came. They thought that they had most of a deal done, not all, but about 90%. Suddenly, the Chinese came back and said, no, we can't do this and this and this. And Trump's response was to escalate. Notably, and I think this is important, the Chinese waited several days before they announced their own countermeasures, which they did on Monday when they announced tariffs on about 5,000 U.S. products. But it sounds as though both sides are trying to go back, think about how they restart this. In particular, the Chinese said they needed a deal that allows them to come out of this with some dignity, which suggests they're very worried about a saving face. They're getting internal pressure, obviously, from some of their hardliners. But it sounds as though they're still talking, and then the next move is for the U.S. representatives to go over there.
Part of the problem here, Bill, is that this kind of a deal is inevitably going to be imbalanced fundamentally in the sense that China has been selling us a lot more goods for years than we've been selling them. And but not that that is a definitive that really all that matters all that much. What matters more is the theft of U.S. property and their predatory trade behavior. And what this deal is designed to do is to get them to stop.
Right. Look, and I think all of us, including the most free traders, we don't deny that China cheats and subsidizes where it shouldn't, that their court system for adjudicating these things is not always fair to foreign interests and so forth. The question is how you do this without harming yourself, right? That's the real question. Can you force China into improving its behavior without putting such a heavy price tag on yourself? And I'm skeptical. If we do get a reasonable deal, I thought the Journal editorial had it right. Get a reasonable deal, see what they do, but take the tariffs off because one, they're not good for us, and they'd be resented in China, right? China's very sensitive about Western powers, right? Telling them what to do. Take off the tariffs, and you could always put them back if they cheat again.
That's a deal that I see as the right one, in the sense that if you're going to have China say the State Council shall pass the following law by say June 30 or September 30, the State Council shall pass the following law on tech transfer by this date. If you're going to be that explicit, And I think you probably have to be in order to get China to honor the terms. You can't have just general promises. I think we've learned that. But you have to then ask, what does China get out of it? And the obvious answer should be, well, they get the relief from tariffs that Trump has imposed. And that strikes me, Kim, as the potential deal. But Trump wants to keep the tariffs on, and he wants China, according to my sources, to be able to earn their way out of the tariffs. And I'm not so sure that that doesn't is really going to help Xi Jinping and China make this happen, because it might even make him look weak to the people that he has to go back and implement this any agreement. And I think the perception of China and Xi, as she as this all-powerful person, is wrong. He has to deal with competing factions in China as well. And there are reformers like the negotiator Liu He, and then there are the forces of the status quo who don't want to make any change.
Well, and it's clear, I think, if you step back, that's what's going on here. Now, none of us really know the internal workings of China, but it seems very clear that Li He came back with this deal, and the hardliners in their version of the Politburo said, no, you do not, you know, we're not going to pass this law. We're not going to do this. This is not not for us. And yes, they have a say in what happens there. And so I think you're right that this is the huge sticking point, really. It's this question at the moment of the Trump administration having a tariff mentality that is completely opposite to what is necessary to get a deal done. Now, in fairness, I would point out there are a lot of people that believe that by keeping the tariffs on and having the Chinese earn their way out of them, it's the only way to enforce and have a truly functional enforcement mechanism to get them to comply with the terms of the deal. But I think I understand that point. But I think that in the end, you're right. The one thing that you can dangle out, given how much the U.S. is asking China to do in return, the one thing you hold out is that. And that might be where the U.S. needs to get.
Well, but on the enforcement point, you can always reimpose them, right? I mean, if they're deemed, my understanding of the draft accord that has been agreed to so far, it includes a mechanism by which if an American company feels aggrieved by China policy, they can then, this will be taken up in regular meetings between the U.S. and China. And every 6 months at the level of Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. trade rep, and Liu He, the senior China negotiator. And if they can't agree to settle it or find some resolution to the dispute, then the U.S. would have the ability to impose tariffs.
Yeah, you could definitely have that. I think that the worry, and again, I'm still with you that I think this is the way this has got to go, but I think the worry inside is that you then create a situation in which you haven't settled anything and that you risk going back and forth again with, you know, threats of tariffs, et cetera.
We're talking about China and U.S. trade disputes, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
Journal.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot here with Bill McGurn and Kim Straussel talking about the U.S.-China trade dispute. And let's turn to the domestic politics of this. The President of the United States, Bill, thinks tariffs are good politics. He thinks what he's doing is very popular. He thinks if you look at the Democrats, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, they're saying, go for it, big guy. This is something they agree with him on, finally. So Trump feels very comfortable imposing tariffs, but there are costs here, particularly economically, to certain parts of the economy, and especially to the Farm Belt.
Well, you know, trade wars are like regular wars. You start with a lot of enthusiasm, and then when you start seeing the cost, people have second thoughts. I remember the steel tariffs of the Bush administration. You know, they put them on, and then all of a sudden, all these jobs got lost, more jobs than they were trying to save, and they finally had to back out of them. I think this is the danger that, you know, what I perceive in the administration is not just that tariffs are a weapon to get the other guy to the table to agree to a deal, but that they're good in themselves. I mean, the president talks about them as though we're making a profit off the tariffs, right? This, which, you know, basically a tax. So in principle, I can see making the case you take some pain, and maybe you have to take some pain to get China on a better path. But I think that only works if it's short term, because the long term pain will come out. The problem, I think, that we have now as free traders is that with Joe Biden saying China's not a problem, I think that's going to tempt the president to take a harder line stance on this and maybe keep the tariffs for a longer period of time than he might, because he wants to contrast his get tough with China and China stealing American jobs and manufacturing with Biden being soft on China. And I think that would be a mistake. I think it's also a mistake for President Trump in the sense that he was, yes, elected to get tough on certain partners, but he was not elected to just get tough. He was elected. He presented himself as the man who could bring them to the table and get deals. And if he doesn't get the deal, he risks his economic achievements and so forth. And I hope he remembers that he really was elected to get deals, not just to make war.
The president's really being pushed and pulled between a couple of different factions, Kim. That's my reading. I mean, on the one hand, you have Larry Kudlow, chief economic advisor. You have his economists, with the exception of Peter Navarro, saying, you know what? We need a deal. We need it for the sake of economic certainty. We need it for the sake of investment. The tariffs are a restraint on investment, and if they stay for many more months or even escalate, you're going to take a hit in declining growth. That's the one hand. On the other hand, you've got people who say, like Steve Bannon now, his former advisor, and some of the others in the party who say, oh, you're much better off running on tariffs. Don't do a deal. To say that nobody's tougher than you on China. And you're forcing them to their knees. You're hurting them, and the economy's strong enough to be able to take it. So do that, and you're better off running on tariffs in 2020.
Yeah, and I think there's also an in-between view too of people that are naturally against tariffs, and recognize all the risks that you just laid out, but also are worried that the risks that we are facing at the moment with Chinese intellectual property theft, they've just reached such a huge moment that something has to be done. And so they want something that certainly sends a message and gets us somewhere, but isn't going to be an ultimate hit to the economy. And that's a tough road to walk down, as we've just been discussing. Overlay all of this as well, too, with the very real domestic politics of the upcoming 2020 election. And the fact that, you know, even some of those people that say, oh, yay, tariffs, have got to acknowledge that key Trump constituencies, people who put him in office last time, and I'm talking about all of those farmers, for instance, in Midwest states, are really bearing the brunt of this, and things are very, very tough. I mean, you know, you look at the average soybean farmer in the Midwest, they've been dealing with flooding going on there. Their cost of inputs has been going up because of tariffs, fertilizer, the steel that goes into farm equipment. Commodity markets are down. China has reduced its commitments for key products like soybeans, and net farm income is dropping. It's a very bad situation for them. And, you know, these are the people that helped elect Trump the first time around. You know, how does he deal with that?
Well, and just in raw political calculation, most of the farm states are comfortably Republican. But if you want to win Iowa, then, you know, that's not a good that damage to farm income is not a good look. And if you want to have any chance in Minnesota, which was close last time and has a significant farming constituency there, you have to have rising farm incomes.
Yeah. And Paul, look, I'm, again, very generally skeptical about the practical case for tariffs. I think, again, in theory, you can say we put them on, we get this deal. I think a better strategy to make these countries pay for it is to increase your own efficiencies, which we've done with the deregulation and the tax cuts and so forth. It's a longer term strategy. But this is basically how Japan came to heel. Remember, in the 70s, people were saying the same thing about Japan. They're saying about China. They rig everything. Remember Gephardt in Korea with the cars? Most of the time, they stop doing this because their inefficiencies catch up with them. And the way to do that is make ourselves more efficient with more deregulation. I think, frankly, more trade deals with the surrounding countries.
But just to play devil's advocate here, what people would say about China is that China is a different nature of competitor because it's so large and it's so going to pose such a threat. And because the Communist Party at the top of that system has as its goal supplanting the United States as the world's dominant power and has been willing to use illegal predatory means to get there, we have to use extraordinary means to force it to abide by global rules.
That's the argument, and we'll see. Again, I think we would be in a stronger case to concentrate. If we want tools to raise the price, China has a lot of inefficiencies. As you say, it's a communist government with state-run enterprises or enterprises owned by government officials that get preferential treatment, their foreign aid and so forth. And
acres of empty apartment buildings
right.
that have been overbuilt.
We should be trying to – look, there's a reason that small places like Hong Kong and Singapore – don't retaliate because they know the costs are high. And in a small economy, you see it. The difference is in an economy like ours and even China's, you could spread it out over a lot of people. So it's not as obvious whom you're hurting when you retaliate.
I'm in the camp that says the president is better off doing a deal. Now, I don't think it can be a deal that says, we'll just buy a few of our products. It has to have some real promises that are strongly that are explicit and the implementation explicit on some of this predatory behavior. But do a deal, the extent to which that helps Trump with the economy, helps the American economy, it puts Trump in a stronger position for winning re-election. But how does it play? If he does, how does this deal versus no deal play for the Democrats? There's a school of thought that says Schumer, Chuck Schumer, the Senate leader, and Pelosi, while they're saying, President, we're supporting you now, the minute Trump does a deal, any deal, they'll turn and say, he gave away the store.
Well, that's true, but there's equal risks of not getting a deal. And we saw that from Democrats, and we saw that previewed by Joe Biden just in the last few days. Bill had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he came out and said, China's no big deal. Well, he got slapped around about that in particular by some of his labor constituents who, you know, are themselves being hurt by the uncertainty in all of this and are very concerned.
I think the phrase he used was, they're not competition for us.
Right. He has clearly rethought. And in the last couple of days, he's now bashing on Trump, saying, you know, this guy can't get a deal. He's gone about it all wrong. We ought to have our labor people and our U.S. and U.S. allies all sitting around the table, too. This is a global thing. If I were president, you know, I'd get this done. So his failure to do a deal is something that Democrats are beginning to focus on. You've also seen criticism of him by, for instance, Kamala Harris from California, who obviously California has got a big tech constituency, also a big farming community. So she's been bashing on him over escalating the war. I mean, the Democrats have a little bit of an issue here because they kind of like tariffs and, you know, their labor constituents like it too. So that has actually meant that what they're going to do is hit him for his ineffectiveness. And that's why I think it would be an all-out win for Trump to do a deal. Good for the economy, and in particular, good for stability in the markets, which has really been an issue.
And would you agree with that, even if he's being attacked by the Democrats for it being a weak deal?
Yes, because look, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. And if a deal is done and it stabilizes the markets and it helps out his constituents and it's good for the economy, that is going to be more important to him in a reelection bid than the fact that Chuck Schumer has added one more thing to his litany of complaints about Donald Trump.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because look, the most important thing for Donald Trump is to keep the economic growth going. In fact, the economic growth is what enables him to impose these tariffs without, you know, it's a lot easier to do when your economy is growing 3% than 1.5%. And so as long as he keeps that in mind, that's what he has going. And I think also, look, if he reaches a deal, he's going to be portraying as I got tough on China and I got results. And if the economy is growing, I think a lot of people will accept that.
All right. Bill McGurn, Kim Strassel, thank you. Thank you all for listening. We will be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.